and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. Today on the show, we have Joel Van Ruckel, Supervisor of Environmental Education for the City of Des Moines Parks and Recreation Department. Thanks a lot for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
And also with us is Jesse Lowry. And Jesse, why don't you tell us a little bit about Blank Park Zoo and conservation and saving animals?
Thanks, Ryan. I'm Jesse Lowry, the Director of Conservation and Research here at Blank Park Zoo. And I always like to start off the show by laying the foundation, talking about the role of a modern zoo in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And basically, what we want to do is use the zoo as a tool to help imperiled animal populations and disappearing habitats all over the world. We have an audience of 500,000 people, and so we've got a fantastic opportunity to really incite behavior change, real conservation actions that people can take in their own life that are going to help save animals. You know, we've surveyed our audience, and folks want to come here to have a fun, affordable day out, and we really excel at providing that for folks in the community. But while they're here, we want to inspire them to do something to help save animals. And Blank Park Zoo saves animals in a variety of ways. We've got a green team that works to make sure our day-to-day business activities are as sustainable as possible. There's really a direct connection between being green and saving animals. We've got local conservation outreach. That includes our pollinator conservation project, Plant Grow Fly. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that with Joel today. We also have a program called Upcycle, where we remove invasive plant species from local parks to help make room for the native plants and the native critters to thrive. And really, the backbone of what a zoo can do to save animals is the support, either financially or in kind, to those individuals and organizations that are out on the front lines in the range countries of the animals that we have here at the zoo. We support several organizations like Hornbill Research Foundation in Thailand, Giraffe Conservation Foundation in Namibia, International Rhino Foundation in all the countries in which rhinos exist. And we give about $70,000 to $75,000 per year to In the Wild Conservation. And I always like to remind folks that none of this would be possible without the support of the community. A portion of every dollar spent at Blank Park Zoo goes to save animals in the wild. And so that means when you come here on a Saturday to have a fun day out with your family, you're saving animals. When you ride the train, you're saving animals. And so we're just delighted to be able to have this platform. And this show is really great because we have been inviting our partners to come in, who we've been working with for years and years to help the local environment here around central Iowa. And it's a great way for us to highlight their work and to talk about the partnerships that we have. And I always say that if you want to get the most bang for your buck, you should really act locally. You should find things in your own backyard, in your own city, that can help make a difference to the environment. And so that's my segue into talking with Joel here from City of Des Moines Park and Rec. Thank you again for joining us today, Joel.
Again, I'm really happy to be here.
We have been working with you for years, partnering on various projects. But let's start off with just telling us a little bit about your background, where you're from, where you went to school, and things like that.
All right. So my formal background is biology and chemistry. My informal background is I grew up like a lot of people that are in my shoes, next to a big, open, vacant area of streams and trees and places to go play during the day when you got kicked out of the house. Went to the University of Northern Iowa thinking that I would go into physical therapy at some point, and instead the tides changed and I ended up working in a nature center as an intern. They liked me so much they brought me back, and I have never left the field since then. Right out of college, I went to work for Warren County Conservation Board. I was there for a long time until a few years ago. Des Moines Parks and Recreation opened up a position that they had never had before in environmental education, and that's where I landed right now.
I love how you talked about how there was a vacant spot that you could play in as a child. I'm curious, was that in an urban area or in a rural area?
My parents actually built the house that I grew up in, and it was on a dead-end street. So it was a neighborhood, but it was at the end of the city. So it was a neighborhood, not out in the country or anything like that. And that area was my total playground forever and ever. I came home with tadpoles. I came home with mosquito bites. Somehow I avoided the poison ivy my whole life. Tree houses, all kinds of things that you would think a kid would love to do. That's what I did.
And building that connection to nature, especially when you're a kid, obviously will make lifelong, lifelong conservationists like yourself. And I have stories like that too. My neighbor's backyard had a beautiful large oak tree that we would climb every day, and we would find moon rocks and all other kinds of special things that we would take up into our tree. So really making that connection with nature, with children, I think is really key. So let's talk about your City of Des Moines Parks and Rec, the organization, and what's your role there now?
My role is, again, the supervisor of environmental education, which means I'm the person that gets to do the programming, that gets people into the parks doing activities where they have some kind of a connection with the natural environment there. All of my programs are education-based, but they're also very fun. So I might entice you with a stand-up paddleboard, but when you leave, you're going to know more than when you started, plus you might get wet. And I can use any venue that I want to get that done. So I do a lot of one-on-one or small group presentations and activities that give people that connection.
So when you're talking about parks in this area, tell us some examples of the parks that you work in.
So the City of Des Moines first park was purchased in 1892, and that was Greenwood Park, which happens to be one of my favorite parks that the Des Moines park system has. We have urban parks, so they're all within the City of Des Moines, which is a little bit different than the county park system or the state park system or the federal park system. We are the parks that are in your backyard if you live in the city, which has its own habitat issues, good or bad. But the cool thing about the Des Moines City Parks is we have a very diverse amount of habitat in those parks. Some of them are well over 100 years. So we have trees that are 200 years old in some of our parks. Of course, they've changed over the last 100 and 125 years. But those are the parks that I get to work in now.
And it's great to know that we don't have to travel to Yellowstone or Glacier National Park to find wilderness and to find the wild. We really can find it in our parks right here in Des Moines, and to create those opportunities for connection to nature. So what ages do you usually deal with your environmental education programs?
I cover the whole gamut. So just recently I was at a senior meal site and I was teaching them about monarch butterflies. I know, one of your favorite topics. Most of my programs are geared towards family, and I'll get everything from preschool all the way up to somebody, and they're always welcome. I don't have any kids. Can I be here? Yes, you're more than welcome to be here. I love that you're here. Come join us and have some fun. Most of my stuff is family-based, so I get elementary ages and under. A few of my programs are specific, and I'll put ages on them so that they're appropriate for the activities.
I think it's really interesting how we really change our tactics for the different age groups for environmental education. Can you talk just a little bit about how it's different educating adults and working with adults as opposed to preschoolers or kids? What kind of differing tactics do you use?
So when you're with the preschoolers, anything goes, and you know that's going to happen. The fun thing is, even though most of my activities are geared towards kids, working towards that lowest common denominator, who's going to be entertained and keep their attention, the activities that I often do and find is the parents just can't keep their hands off, or those grown-ups that are just up. I have that question. They just can't wait. They need to get involved too. And that's what really makes it fun. When you're with a more mature crowd, it opens up doors like PowerPoints, standing and speaking in front of a microphone, which are just really not my forte, because no matter what, I'm going to bring something in that you can touch or see or hands on. Just like the outreach from the zoo, when they come in with that live animal, I might not always have that live animal, but I'm going to have a plant, or I'm going to have something that you can really connect with, even if it's something creepy that you don't like or hairy or scary. It might be in a jar, but I'm going to grab your attention with that.
I know elementary school kids and preteens like the gross factor, and that's one way that you can kind of reach them and get them excited and interested in the environment. So let's talk about some of your favorite projects things that you've been working on this past summer, some of your favorite programs that you have.
So one of my favorites that has been added on to a little bit more and a little bit more over the last couple summers is stand-up paddleboarding with the Naturalist. And I mentioned it before, but it's a fun one. Stand-up paddleboarding is an activity that has grown in popularity, and we actually have boards that you can rent out at Grays Lake during the summer, but there's a big factor of people that are maybe a little afraid to go out and do it on their own. So I say, hey, come paddle with me. I've got a fleet of boards. Sign up, show up, we get you going on the board, and then I've kind of got you at my mercy, stuck out in the middle of the lake trying to paddle around. And Grays Lake is a very interesting park for the city of Des Moines because it's massively used, but it's our biggest body of water that's not one of the rivers. And from there, we have wildlife around the park, but I get to give people the view from in the water to the outside edge. So we're looking for wildlife, anything that flies over, anything on the shore, anything that we can see underneath the water from our board. And that's really been good. I keep getting a good response from that, and we just keep doing it over and over and adding more.
That's exciting. And paddleboarding is kind of the new black as far as, you know, the outdoor recreation. I've never tried it myself, but it sounds really fun. And you can see all kinds of things in the water. And you've got a great prairie patch, lots of native plants all around Grays Lake. So I love how you, I'm sure millions of people, visit that park and get exposed to those kinds of native plants they might not see elsewhere.
And then the fun part about that is even though there are over a million visitors that come into Grays Lake, by the time they're done with me, they say things like, oh, yeah, you know, I walked past these plants, but I never saw them from that point of view. I didn't realize that these are here for the pollinators. I didn't know the importance. I didn't know they were native. So that's what I say, even though we're doing something fun through parks and recreation is a huge part of what we do. I get to be the education side of that and teach you something about what you're doing sometimes.
What's one thing about Des Moines Parks or your job that most people don't know?
I am the face of the education, so people see me and know me, but what they don't realize is the huge amount of staff that's on the backside that's taking care of our natural areas. The Des Moines Parks and Recreation System a few years ago had Dr. Tom do a inventory of all of our parks and the plants that are there and the historic value, what is native, what is not native. From that, Des Moines Parks and Recreation has set its standards and ideas on what parks are we going to work on, what are we going to do to those parks to either make them more native or restore what was or try and salvage the plants that are there, because there's always people impact on our parks.
And that's really important, is to take stock and find out what's there and find out where the resources would be the most effective. And so we're going to those parks that already have those native patches and adding to it, protecting areas that are important. And I've heard about that census of the parks before, and that sounds really interesting and very needed. Let's talk about another one of your programs. I know that you do several, and you do things with bluebirds, I think, and butterflies. What's another program you want to speak about?
So as partnerships go, as we mentioned before, I have been doing a lot of programming on monarch butterfly conservation along with the plant grow fly in the zoo and a lot of other people in the area. So that's been a big initiative, and I carry it spring through summer and into the fall, where we show people ways to provide their own habitat for butterflies and pollinators using some natives and ornamentals. That's one of the fun things about Des Moines Parks and Recreation, too, is we grow over 300,000 annuals in our greenhouse, which they're flowers, not always natives, which I'm going for, but they're providing pollen and habitat sources within the city of Des Moines, in our neighborhood parks, in our parks, up and down Fleur. And then we carry through into the summer, and then in the fall, we do monarch tagging, which I've done for a lot of years. I actually do it here at the zoo for the festival. I've tried to hit all of our different parks. Well, not all of them. We have a lot of parks out there. I hit several different parks and invite people to come in and help catch butterflies and tag and teach them about how we've learned about these monarchs. Not only are we trying to provide habitat for them, but how we've learned what we need to know about them. And then again, with the bluebirds you mentioned, that's been a great one, which is volunteer-based. Since we don't have a lot of staff, this bluebird program has been great, where we've put series of bluebird boxes in our parks and cemeteries, and our volunteers monitor and watch them, and we've had exponential growth of bluebirds that have hatched out and fledged in our parks. So in one way, I'm creating habitat that's not natural by putting a box there to bring in the natural wildlife and bring it closer to the people of Des Moines.
So tell us a little bit more about what a bluebird needs and where we put these boxes.
Bluebirds like open areas because they're bug and insect eaters, so they like the mowed grass, and our Des Moines parks have a lot of mowed grass in the area. They also like to have a few trees behind them, but not too many. Once the wooded areas get thick enough, then the wrens, which also love bluebird boxes, will come and take over them. The boxes themselves are an artificial cavity or a hole. The bluebirds have to have a hole to build their nest and lay their eggs and bring their fledglings out of. Without that hole, they won't build their nest. A lot of those natural holes are missing now. Those old dead trees, we can't have them hanging out and falling down on our citizens in the park, so they get cleared out. Working with our natural resources staff, it's fun. Off the trails and further back, we still have some of those trees, dead trees, and creating some natural habitat. Though with the open mode areas, that's where the people go too. So I put these boxes where they're visible by the people and visible by the birds, and they move in and take over, and hopefully everybody's happy.
You know, my mind always goes back to pollinators, and we were talking about dead and dying trees. It's really important for pollinator habitat too. And like you said, a lot of those are just getting cleared and they become less and less available to the pollinators. And I also want to just chat a little bit more about the monarch tagging that you mentioned and explain to everybody kind of what that is and how we partner with you on Plant Grow Fly. Basically, there's a little sticker that comes from University of Kansas or Monarch Watch. And in the fall, during the southern migration, you can very carefully catch a butterfly with a net and very carefully grasp it with your fingers and attach this little tag. This tag you have ordered from the University of Kansas, and it's got a special serial number on it. So you release the butterfly and record the serial number, and it might get found in Mexico. So the monarchs will finish their southern migration to Mexico, and the folks down there will get paid a little bit of money for every tag that they find, and that's how scientists can track the migration. And Blank Park Zoo has started to tag monarchs just the past couple years, but how many years have you been doing it, and have any of your tags been found?
I've been doing this for a long time. I can't even say how long. I've gone through different tag series, different sets of them, and it's kind of fun to tell the people that. I have not had one of my tags reclaimed. I have found butterflies that were tagged by other people in the area, which was kind of fun. And just through my inner circle of environmental education people, I could find out who it was. Been doing this for a long time, and it's really fun. This is one of those things that works for all the different ages too, because after we tag that butterfly, and I'll have somebody help me release it and have them put your finger out, and I'll put that butterfly on there, and they're so excited. And it doesn't matter if they're 5 years old or if they're 75 years old, when they touch that butterfly and it's tagged and they know that they're part of the process and they understand why we're doing it and it takes off, they're excited to see it go. They want it to make it to Mexico, and they've already learned more about monarch butterflies than they ever thought they knew.
And it's a memory that they're never going to forget. And we just happened upon one of your programs, my family and I, this past summer. And that is exactly right. Joel had a gaggle of children and families all around him. And everybody was super excited to be able to see and to touch and to be a part of something, you know, a three-country effort to save the most iconic insect in the world. So monarch butterflies have decreased about 90% in the past 20 years. There's some illegal logging going on in Mexico, but it's a World Heritage Site now, and that's really been taken care of. But another big reason is loss of breeding and feeding resources in the Midwest, especially. And so that's where folks like the City of Des Moines Park and Rec and Blank Park Zoo can step in and help give people the tools to put these native plants and these resources back into our environment and it really can be easy. You need to put special plants, host plants that the butterflies need. For example, monarch butterflies need their host plant, which is milkweed, and they need nectar sources, which is just stuff to eat for adult butterflies. And so it really can be that easy. And that's one of our biggest partnerships between our two organizations is through Plant Grow Fly. And City of Des Moines Park and Rec is an important partner of Plant Grow Fly. And what that means is that they're helping disseminate that information to their audience and showing people just how easy it is to plant pollinator habitat. And it's been fantastic to partner with you for so many years. And we just got over 1,000 registered butterfly gardens with Plant Grow Fly. They span the state of Iowa and the Midwest. And we like to call them pollinator pit stops. Little gas stations for the bees and butterflies to get some of the resources they need as they move to larger swaths of habitat like Gray's Lake, Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge, big schoolyard gardens and such. And so that's really been great. We've also just planted a garden at the state capitol this past summer. And so it is on the northeast side of the capitol. And four beds of native plants. So stop by that next time everybody goes to the state capitol downtown Des Moines.
And that's one of the things I think a lot of people might not know about our parks also is we do have some kind of large chunks of prairie. The city of Des Moines made a decision a while back that in its parks we were going to reintroduce and bring back and use more of our natives, which are better pollinator sources and better nectar sources. And so when I get my fingers in the mix, I'm always trying to get those extra milkweed plants put in there. But some of our bigger parks, like Ewing, actually have some big swaths of prairie in them. And in our other parks, we have smaller bits put into our bioswales, put into our rain gardens that collect the water that runs off the parking lots, put into some decorative flower beds instead of our annuals. We have perennials in there. And again, that's kind of where I get to step in, and most people don't know what they're walking by until they're walking with me, and then they learn what it is and why it's there and how it's different and what the city of Des Moines has done, what changes they've made to help wildlife conservation, water quality, and all those things that go along with more plants and better habitat.
It's all connected. For sure. We've talked about butterflies. We've talked about bluebirds. We've talked about paddleboarding. Any other programs that you want to highlight that you're excited about?
So a lot of my programs are seasonal because of just the nature of the event. So one of the things that I've been doing for the last several winters is highlighting the bald eagles that come into the city of Des Moines. Now, this is one of those birds that was endangered. And when I was growing up, my father worked at a job where he was out and about everywhere, and he'd tell me he had seen an eagle on the river. And to me, that was like, I didn't even know if I should believe him because we'd never see them. They're back. They're a success story for conservation, and so I like to show them off. And I do an event off of our Southeast 6th Street Bridge in downtown Des Moines. The eagles like to collect around that bridge, and again, some people probably drive past them every day and don't even know they exist. And then I come along and we do Bald Eagle Day presentation, and I get people standing out on the bridge in sub-zero degrees with wind chill factor going, "Oh, look at that. There's an eagle. There's two of them." They're very excited about it. And for those not quite brave enough to stand out in the cold, I do some indoor programming right there at the south end of the bridge where we bring in live birds and do more hands-on activity for the younger kids so they can learn about the eagles and how neat and how interesting it is that they have survived, that they've come back, their numbers are increasing, and that they are right in Des Moines. One of my favorites, too, is we have the bald eagle nest at Gray's Lake. Here we are back at Gray's Lake again. And they have been nesting there for years, raising fledglings, and there are diehard people that go out every day and take pictures. And then again, people walk by and don't even know they exist until they see me standing there with the spotting scope saying, "Hey, you want to see some eagle babies?" And they're like, "Well, okay, here we go." So when I interviewed for the job here, they showed me that eagle nest. And that was one of the things that made me think, I'm interested in this place and I think I would like working here.
The bald eagle recovery is such a great example of society seeing that something is wrong, finding the solution and acting upon it and having fantastic results. And we are so lucky to have so many eagles in the state of Iowa.
And you are going to be doing some promotion of eagles and...
We are. We're going to start messaging very soon about how important it is to for hunters as conservationists in the state to use non-lead ammunition. Because when lead ammunition is used, especially in deer hunting, it's often left in gut piles and in the environment. And scavenging animals such as eagles can come down and ingest that lead. And we all know that lead is not good for anybody, humans or animals. And so stay tuned for more of that. That'll be on the zoo's website and other media outlets soon through the zoo. But we're so excited to partner with you. And we just got a couple minutes left. Talk about what conservation action would you recommend that families take? Our audience here at the zoo is families with young children. We want to inspire those conservation actions. We want to get people engaged. What's that one thing that you would recommend that they do?
Well, the motto for Des Moines is helping Des Moines live well, play hard, and protect the earth. And I come in on the protect the earth part, but also the play hard. We have our open spots, our open spaces in our Des Moines parks for people to get outside and play and be active and get those kids outside. Taking them to the zoo is awesome. Taking them to a park is awesome. Kicking them off of the couch and away from the TV or the computer or the tablet or the Game Boy is even better, even if it's in the backyard. They might not have that huge space that I had next to your house to deal with, but kick them out. Tell them they have to stay out. Let them use their imaginations. You should see the holes that have been dug in my backyard. It's not pretty, but every time I see it, I know that something good is happening out there.
We want to see those kids with dirt underneath their fingernails and skinned knees again.
Yeah, and sometimes as a parent, you have to be the one that gets dirty too, because if they haven't planted that plant before, they might not know what they're doing, and you get to be the one that shows them how to do it.
That's fantastic. Where can folks go to find out more about your programs?
dmparks.org. Look under the environmental education. Look under the calendar. We have so many things going on and so much information. It's worth two visits.
Well, once again, Blank Park Zoo is honored to partner with you guys on so many programs over the years. I'm excited to see what the future holds with our partnership. And don't forget that every time you visit Blank Park Zoo, you're helping to save animals in the wild. And I think that just about wraps it up, Ryan.
Yeah, I think we're just about out of time. Thanks a lot, Joel, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, give the website one more time.
www.dmparks.org.
Okay, great. Well, that will wrap it up for today. If you want to learn more about Blank Park Zoo, head over to our website at blankparkzoo.com. There's all sorts of resources on that website, our hours and our activities, also a big section on conservation. And then you can head over to our YouTube channel. We were talking about monarch tagging earlier, and we have a video up there on just how to do that. So check that out, blankparkzoo.com. Well, that'll do it for today. Join us next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.